treatment. Here are a couple of references from Mary Baker Eddy about this all-important subject of treatment. On page 146, she states, "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus's healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease." On page 330, she states this, "When the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." And then from page 330 to 340, she gives the specific text of those 32 planks. In her classes in the Metaphysical College, which she taught from 1881 to 1898, she asked her class, "What element in a treatment was most often neglected?" The response was the love, which, as she refers to, is the spirit. But she corrected them and said, "No, it is the letter that is missing in most treatments." That certainly is food for thought on the importance of what she states in the very first sentence that I read. The quote from page 146, which is basically linked directly with the second quote, which is the 32 planks. Also notice when she states the second sentence that was read, which is, "When the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." Check out the word "is." When the 32 planks of the platform is understood. By utilizing the singular form of the word "is" instead of "are," A-R-E, the plural form, she is stating very clearly that all 32 planks are indelibly connected, and therefore all 32 must not only be understood as one unit, but if anything is missing out of the 32 planks that we do not understand and do not utilize in the whole thought process of a treatment, then we're going to be missing part of our platform. Therefore, we better really be careful where we step, or we're going to be going down below the platform. And we're not going to have the support that is needed in order to bring forth the statement where she says the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. So we lose the infallibility and we therefore are subject to the fallibility. Therefore, the entire demonstration may fall through the cracks, through the missing plank or planks. Therefore, the demonstration is in great jeopardy. John Morgan brings out something very important about this spirit. There are four operators in mathematics which are titled add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And of course, there are 10 digits from 0 to 9. The system of divine metaphysics also has elements, and these are the 7, which are the terms for God. And there are 4 levels, which are described on page 115 and 116. And there are 4 operators. The 4 operators are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. John Morgan emphasizes the importance of realizing that we cannot even approach the Word, which is the first element of the operators, and the Word really means what is God all about. The second one is the Christ, which refers to translating whatever comes our way from a so-called material sense of it to the real truth, which is the spiritual sense. And the third is the Christianity element, the third element of the 4 operators, and it really means demonstration. And the fourth is science. Demonstration really refers to proving that we understand the Word, which is what God is all about, and the Christ, which is the translation or interpretation from a spiritual view. And when we understand those two adequately, then we're prepared to be applying Christianity to those two factors, whereby we can be in a position to work on the healing. And of course, what we really do is work on the consciousness so that we are able to prepare the consciousness for the truth, because the truth is what does the healing. And the less we think about the problem, the easier it is to accomplish the healing. The fourth, science, means that we are living the Christ consciousness, and therefore everything in our life is automatically being interpreted from a spiritual basis, which means that it is a part of our continuous living the Christ consciousness. That's exactly what Jesus did, and therefore he was able to instantaneously heal. other ones that were able to instantaneously heal would include Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, and of course, Mary Baker Eddy. And I'm sure there were other top students. But those three in particular indicated in their writings that they had 15-minute appointments. I don't believe Mary Baker Eddy particularly mentioned the time element for an appointment, but the other ones had regular office hours where the patient would come in and wait in the waiting room for their turn. And once they walked into the office where the practitioner was, one of those three that were just mentioned, then at the end of 15 minutes, the appointment was over. And the healing was effective in most cases. A few exceptions would be that maybe there was something that the individual needed to do, such as what was described by Wentworth Winslow in his article, The Mining Engineer. What John Morgan said that was so important about the Word or understanding what God is all about was that the thought had to be prepared before we could even approach the topic of the Word, what God was all about. There are basically the 15 root notions that have been mentioned, which are the components of the system, and to repeat, 7 synonymous terms for God, which of course are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The 4 levels of consciousness, which were referred to as stated on page 115 and 116, 3 of which are mortal mind, and the 4th and the highest is immortal mind, and the 4 operators of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The treatment is most complete when all of those 15 root notions are covered. And not only the 7 terms for God, but the interconnection and the networking of each of those terms interacting with each of the other 6 terms and interacting with the various features or attributes of itself. For example, mind interacts with mind, as well as interacting with spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And this is the same with each one of them. Spirit interacts with mind and itself, which is spirit, and soul, principle, life, truth, and love. It's important to understand that we should be listening intently, carefully, with a very open thought for direction as we're thinking about a treatment. And this, of course, can be done either mentally or verbally. And that's an individual demonstration based on what seems to be natural at the moment. If one records the treatment, there's a great advantage because then when it is finished, one can listen to it and learn from it. If one is really listening, they will find that things are said, assuming it is verbal, that one would ask themselves, where did that come from? In other words, it was a spiritual revelation while they were involved in having their consciousness directed toward the purification which is needed for every treatment. Now, this, of course, excludes those who are advanced enough to have instantaneous treatment. For that means the consciousness is already purified to the point that the demonstration can be delivered immediately. As an example on how the individual terms for God work together, if one thinks about mind, one will discover that the word intelligence is one of the words used to define mind. If one looks at the words that are used by Mary Baker Eddy to define love, they will find that one of those words is purpose. If one wanted to think about how does mind interact with love, they could then say that whatever purpose we have for what we are doing, which in this case is a part of love, then one must realize that they must have an intelligent purpose, which means that the intelligence of mind is interacting with the purpose of love. Mary Baker Eddy states that she makes strong demands on love, and that love is not a wishy-washy love. One could think about that as maybe principle interacting with love. Principle being structure and system. That would eliminate the possibility of a wishy-washy love. In other words, there must be a standard that is utilized that is based on the truth of God. So there we would have the term principle and truth both interacting together with love. And this is very common to think about multiple terms for God interacting at the same time with one or the other terms for God. And if we think in reverse about mind and love, and think about the word action. Action is one of the words used to define mind. One of the words used to define love is grace. So if we are going to be involved in an action of mind, it would be good to think about that we must be graceful in our action. And that would be applying love to mind. The grace of love being applied to the action of mind. There are three introductory quotes at the beginning of Science and Health which give us direct clues as to how to approach Christian Science. The first one is on the wall of many churches, and it's a quote from Jesus as stated in the Gospel of John. It states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second one is from Shakespeare. "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy, and it states, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." The first one seems to be self-explanatory, but we need to be thinking always in spiritual terms. So when we're searching for truth, we need to be thinking about spiritual truth. In other words, what does the word truth with a capital T designate? What are the words that are used to define truth? And what is the function of truth? How does truth relate to other terms for God? And what will truth make us free from? And how about the quote from Shakespeare? "Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Our entire endeavor when we are stating a treatment should be focused toward cleansing consciousness. One very fine practitioner stated to me that when she received a call from a patient, she would let them describe whatever they needed to describe, and this was without her prodding at all. They would just call and start talking. And she said that once the phone call was over, it took as much as 30 minutes to cleanse her thought of basically everything that they laid on the table, so that she could start with a fresh thought, a clear consciousness that had nothing in there about problems. No disease, which is anything that is a discordant thought, and nothing that was unlike God in any way, about anything or anyone. Dr. Fluno, who is one of our authors, wrote an article called Criticism. And Mary Baker Eddy had him give lectures on that one word. And one of the statements in his lecture was that criticism leads to all evil. That's a very comprehensive statement. So when the practitioner is spending that time, whatever is required, to cleanse her thought about the phone call, she has to make sure that there is nothing in there that is a type of criticism in any way. Mary Baker Eddy stated that she stopped whatever she was doing every hour to examine her thought to make sure that she was not criticizing anyone about anything, and that she was only thinking about anyone and everyone and everything in a constructive way, one where she was letting perfection be the attracting force in her thought. So I would not be surprised if that was about 18 times in a 24-hour period. And of course, she's also stated that she prayed 3 times a day for all humanity. If we want to think about time management, which is an extremely important topic, one that we should strive constantly to master and practice throughout our waking hours, that we certainly need to schedule specific time to do our own reality check on our thoughts. Along this same line, one of the greatest practitioners of all time, next to Mary Baker Eddy, is Frederick L. Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. He said our purpose on planet Earth is to make other people happy. Think about the golden rule. How do we feel when other people make an effort to make us happy? I think that we open up into a new dimension of receptivity. All we have to do is think about the golden rule if we want to think about making other people happy. What would you like other people to think about you or do for you that would add to your joy? And then how can we do that for other people? And it should be in reverse order. For it says, do unto others. So we have to take the first action. Think about Shakespeare. What do we want to think about others? We certainly need to be thinking along the lines that Mary Baker Eddy did, and that was to think about perfection as it relates to everyone. No criticism, nothing negative, if we're going to be following one of the greatest Christian scientists, probably the greatest Christian scientist of all time, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. Although I would have to say that Christ Jesus was a Christian scientist, I guess we could just consider them equal. Christ Jesus being the Son of God and Mary Baker Eddy being the daughter of God. Now, how about that third quote? The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. Do you think Mary Baker Eddy did that? You can bet your bottom dollar on it. I believe prayer without ceasing is living your prayer. No matter what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're saying about anything, anyone, whatsoever, It should be in alignment with the kinds of things we've been discussing in this prayer treatment, which is titled again, Treatment Structure. Time management will teach us not to waste time. For once a moment passes, you'll never see it again. Doesn't do any good to work twice as hard the next moment, or tomorrow, or the next week, because we could have done that anyway. So if we don't utilize the present moment, it is lost, wasted forever. Time management is very important. How about reading? Do you know how to read a book? And I refer to intelligent reading. The author of the book by that title is Mortimer J. Adler, A-D-L-E-R. And it is considered the classic guide to intelligent reading. He was the chairman of the Encyclopedia Britannica Board of Editors. And he certainly could not have been bored with life, for he lived to be almost 100 years old. It is highly recommended that no matter how proficient someone is in their reading, that they take a look at that book from time to time, because it's very easy, no matter how proficient one is and how much they strive to be a perfect, intelligent reader, that reviewing the basics can be constructive. It seems that the most advanced instructors refer back to the basics as their platform, and repetition is also very common among the finest instructors. Also, the finest instructors will inform you that if you really want to remember something, you have to practice it. And the best way to practice anything is to live it. Like Ashkenazi, one of the greatest pianists of all time. His name is spelled Ashkenazy. His first name is Vladimir. He was Russian. As well as being a pianist, he was conductor. He was considered one of the greatest of all time. And when asked in one of his public performances, how can he play with such perfection? His reply was, practice, 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 until the music plays me. What is the most important thing in our life? Do we practice, practice, practice until the principle of that activity plays us? Albert Einstein said that curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. If we took this attitude as he did, when we study Christian Science as he did, we would find new insights, new dimensions, transform our thinking, speech, and action. We could really take to heart this so important quote stated from Shakespeare that it would help us transform our lives. What did Albert Einstein think of Mary Baker Eddy and the textbook and Christian Science? Here are a few words from him. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. He said that about 1945 or 6, so he's referring to when she discovered it in 1866. And that was many years, for he devoted most of his life to learning what she had already discovered. And that is that there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, and that we cannot be limited by time or space. He also stated, "Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book." So if you put all of these things together that he said, it really gives us a summary of why Christian Science should be the driving force, the driving attraction to where we devote our efforts. It is the only religion that includes both science and religion. And, as he states, it includes everything that is. In other words, all reality is stated in Science and Health. And he knew what a challenge it was for her to bring this forth to the world, because she could not vote and she could not hold title to property. Women had neither one of those rights. So that's why he stated, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. As in Jesus' time, they probably were not even counted. If one were to take a survey of how many people attended an event, like in Jesus' time, they would say 4,000 plus women and children, or 5,000 plus women and children, the two large audiences where they actually gave numbers about his hillside talks. So think about those numbers, and the average family probably had 3 or 4 children. So instead of 4,000, it would be 5 times that. Instead of 5,000, it would be 5 times that. So we're talking probably between 20 and 25,000 people at each of the two events. And to what most people think is magic, he created enough food to feed them all. Obviously, he was living what he was teaching and what Mary Baker Eddy discovered to be the science of how he performed his healings. What kind of a following did he have? of sincere students? All you have to do is look at the crucifixion. Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of Jesus, Mary's sister, and that apparently refers to the sister of the mother of Jesus. And there's another Mary listed, and John was there. So, even Lazarus, who he raised from the dead, did not show up, and nor did any of the other ones that he healed. And that's basically the same kind of receptivity that Mary Baker Eddy received when she passed on. Apparently, everyone that lived with her were threatened by the board of directors not to talk about her or write about her. And they all yielded to those threats. Instead of getting the whole field of Christian Scientists together, which were very strong at that point, and throwing the board of directors out. So they all yielded to the threats, just like everyone was fearful at the crucifixion of Jesus. So it boils down to it's God and us individually. Forget other humans. Because humanity is based on the belief that we're all of the lineage of Adam and Eve. In one's own individual development, if they're really interested in being able to do what it says in Genesis chapter 1, where it says, "And God gave man dominion over all the earth and everything therein," then we give you the formula on how you can do that. And one can look at pages 600 to 700 of Science and Health of the 1910 edition to get some very strong direction on that area. And we refine that with additional things that will make it a lot easier to accomplish, even though it means more effort on your part. What they did in those pages of 600 to 700 is to read Science and Health from beginning to end, and they basically had done it, most of them had done it multiple times before they got to the point that everything in their life was healed, and that they then wrote their testimony. We recommend that a serious student of Christian Science would do it forever. Just continuously read Science and Health from beginning to end. And what do we mean by read? We made the reference to the expert on reading, which is Mortimer Adler from Encyclopedia Britannica fame, and that's considered the classic. And that emphasizes in intelligent reading a number of things, and we add to that other things that we have found helpful. A combination of what he recommends and what we've combined with what we've found to be very useful include the following. Always read the three introductory quotes, which are right after the title pages. There's three of them that were discussed previously. Also, be very familiar with the contents page, because the sequence and the titles of the chapters are very important. The preface, very important. Any introductory quotes to any of the chapters, very important. any section titles? For example, in the Science of Being, there's a separate section for the 32 planks of the platform. And there are other chapters that are broken up into sections. We have all of this detailed on our website under the index for science and health. Also, the sections to the book. The first 13 chapters are the basics of Christian Science, and chapter 14 is recapitulation of chapters 1 through 13. And starting with chapter 15 is the key to the scriptures. And if you look at the index, you will get all of these details and more. It's very important to pay attention to things preceding and things following what you're reading as your primary reference or a primary topic that you're studying. Always read any titles that are sometimes referred to as marginal headings. We refer to them as paragraph topics or topics because some of them extend more than one paragraph. Now, something else that we feel is extremely important and will definitely improve your understanding of science and health is to record every single thing you read and keep your recordings. And every time you read the same thing again, start fresh without any notes or listening to any recordings that you already did. And you should listen to the recordings after they are finished. And you will find them very helpful and you will learn a lot from them. You can do this without it being the total focus, such as if you're in the bathroom or taking a shower or preparing food or doing anything in the kitchen or any other routine things where you can listen to it and gather what is being said without just doing nothing but listening to it. Also, it is highly recommended to record, number one, the original text, and then, secondly, put it in your own words and record it. If you can explain what something means and stick to the truth about what it is, then you have understood it better. It's like teaching. If you teach something, you will learn more about it than if you don't. When you do this, it forces your focus to look for key things which are very easy to overlook if you're not recording it. The best teachers and instructors at all levels, whether you're talking about basic or very advanced people, always say that the best way to learn anything is to do it. In other words, you need to practice what it is that you're learning. You need to live it. Christian Science is a way of life. It's not a religion where you just go to some institution or some building structure or get together with friends and discuss something. It is a way of life. It should have an influence on everything you think, say, and do. The entire atmosphere of the way you live. It is very important to realize there are three basic categories of individuals. One is a very negative type individual. A second one is one that is passive and basically like a sheep. And the third is one that is very positive. All three of these are stated in terms of spiritual terms. So, for example, the negative one is one that is looking out only for themselves. They are takers. They will be looking for what is free, which means that they want to live off of what someone else earned, the fruits of the labors of someone else. The passive ones, the sheep, the followers, don't have a strong drive in any direction. They lack a strong purpose. They do what is necessary to survive, but they don't seem to have any other strength other than survival. If you want to be successful in Christian Science, you need to be the third type, which in importance is really number one. And that is that you are a giver. Like Frederick L. Rawson said, our life should be devoted to making other people happy. Jesus did this. Mary Baker Eddy did this. All of the top people that have been mentioned in this recording did this. One should constantly be cultivating a life of giving. That's exactly what Jesus was doing when he taught on the hillside, the 4,000 and the 5,000 group, plus women and children. All of the time he devoted to his disciples, he was giving. All of the healings, he was giving. Mary Baker Eddy devoted her life to the discovery, founding, and leading Christian Science. She was giving, giving, giving. She healed everything you can imagine, just like Jesus. She never failed in her healing. She prayed, as mentioned, hourly. That was giving, and making sure that she was looking for the best possible, which is perfection, in everyone, all the time, and everything. She corrected things that needed to be corrected. If bad weather was approaching the area where she lived, they would solve the problem, just like Jesus did when he was in the ship and the disciples were all worried that they were going to drown. He stilled the waters. He neutralized the storm. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy did and those living in her household. The Bible says we should tithe. Tithe means a tenth part. I look upon that as being the average. If you want to be an average student, you would tithe 10%. If you want to be a B student, you got to be looking at probably 20. If you want to be an A-plus student and really excel, you're looking at 30. In fact, you may be looking at everything that you don't need. The point is, what do you want to do? Do you want to cultivate giving or taking? It is not very pleasant to admit what I'm going to tell you, but we find that there is a tiny percent of Christian Scientists that visit our website that are givers. Almost every single one is a taker. They want to get everything they can for free, and they want to give and do give nothing or close to nothing. And we're not alone. We're friends with another, well, many Christian Science websites, but another one that sends out 2,000 emails a week giving archive Bible lessons that were prepared by the Bible Lesson Committee between 1910 and 1920. They sent out one of them a week to 2,000 different people. I ask the one that does the work, because I know it takes her several hours to do it. I've discussed it with her. And I said, out of the 2,000 emails you send every week, how many times do you get a thank you from someone? So remember, they send us out 52 times a year, every week. And she said, anywhere from none to one or maybe two in a week out of 2,000. 20 would be 1%. 2 would be 1/10 of 1%. So it's between 0 and 1/10 of 1%. Everyone is a taker. And these are Christian Scientists. Our example is Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy and other very advanced students and healers that I've mentioned in this recording. So Christian Scientists are just as much of a taker, if not more so, than anyone else. It's pathetic. They should be extremely ashamed. And how often do they give gratitude? Every time you learn anything from anything you read or anyone you study about, you should be grateful and voice it. If it's someone that is gone, and if it's someone that is alive, you should do more than that. Do you have any skills? Any teaching skills? Could you help someone learn something that would be useful to them that they would like to learn? What do you do when you see someone begging on the street? I know someone that was approached when they were coming out of a department store for money. And they looked good. They didn't look homeless or dirty clothes or any of that kind of stuff. You know, they looked like a normal person that was ready to go to work. And so the individual that was approached by the one that was begging for money said, "Well, why do you need money?" And the man said he lost his job and he didn't have any reserve to depend on and he hadn't eaten in 2 days. So he asked him, "Well, what kind of work do you do?" He said he was a handyman. He could fix anything, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, you name it, and he could fix it. He really got a joy out of fixing things. He didn't have any money to put in his vehicle for gas. So they went together and got his vehicle over to the gas station and filled it up with gas. He followed the man home and showed him a list of repairs that he had been accumulating. And he says, "Do you know how to fix these things?" And they went through the list one by one. He said, "Yeah, I can do all this." He ended up hiring him. He worked for him for 3 months. The man got ahead in his money business. And when he was finished with that 3 months of work, the fellow had found a job the day before to go and work full time. Instead of giving money to someone as if you could care less one way or the other, he searched for a solution. I know another incident where someone came out of a store and there was a woman with her daughter in a wheelchair and she had no control over her body. I don't even know what you would call the problem, but she had no control over her body. And a very sad sight to see, apparently. Instead of just giving them money, he was thinking, how can I be of help? What he ended up doing was giving them money, and then he went home and he made up a sheet of paper with some key thoughts from Christian Science about God, about man reflecting God, about God did not create whatever problem that her daughter had. And he suggested that she read them and read them to her daughter. Next time he went there, she was so elated. And the third time he went there, she showed her a Bible that she had purchased. So he took more thoughts to her, explaining about Genesis, chapter 1 versus chapter 2 and so forth, and how her daughter was created, as it states in Genesis chapter 1, verse starting with verse 26. Next time he went back there, the woman got out of her chair and hugged him. She could not thank him enough. And she said her daughter really liked what she was reading to her. She couldn't express enough gratitude. Are we going to be cultivating a life of giving? Or taking? Taking is stealing. Stealing. Just like the board of directors of the Mother Church. As soon as Mary Baker Eddy passed on, they took her picture out of her book. Forbid people to talk about her. They destroyed all the statues that were all through the New England area that had been put up, and a very special pyramid that was scaled to what the big pyramid in Gaza was that has all the prophecies inside it in the stairways and written on the walls and so forth. If we separate the discoverer from the discovery, we're the worst kind of thief there could ever be. We're a murdering thief. We murder the idea and we try to steal it. We try to steal someone's identity, or we try to destroy someone's identity. Are we a Christian Scientist? Is that the way a Christian Scientist should be thinking and talking and doing? Mary Baker Eddy had someone in her office, and she said, "What do you do if you see a stray dog out on the street? Or you see an accident? Or you see someone in need? What do you do?" They didn't know how to answer. She said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" Then they knew exactly what they should be doing, but they weren't. So they admitted, shamedly, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I'm not a Christian Scientist." Is that how we would answer to Mary Baker Eddy? If she posed that question to us? Or do we try to solve a problem? And if we're going to give money, do we give folding money? Or do we actually give coins? I suppose if you're talking about a gold coin, that's a different story. They're worth about $3,000 right now, a 1 ounce gold coin. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about pocket change. Penny, nickel, dime, quarter, half a dollar. In fact, I don't even know that there's much in the way of 50-cent pieces around anymore. I mean, what can they do with the little bit that you give them if you give them coins? How about taking him into a place and buying him a meal? Or going to a fast food place and having them pick out what they want and pay for it and let them take it and eat it wherever they want to. Complete meal with drink and everything, their choice. Have you looked in your home and see what you don't need? Do you have clothes that you could give away? A lot of places have these thrift shops that support, you know, animals that are without homes and so forth. Do you have things in your garage you don't need? Are you keeping too much food on hand so that you actually end up have to throw it out? The shelf life expires on canned foods or whatever. It takes effort to be an A+ student. But you have an opportunity to transform your life. The difference between being a taker and being a passive sheep, and being a giver, an active giver, where you really genuinely try to help someone solve their problem, is the difference between darkness and daylight. Have you ever been in need? I think you're getting the idea. Are we going to be a Christian Scientist, or are we going to be evil? Be a thief? We shouldn't study a science and health that does not have Mary Baker Eddy's picture in it. We shouldn't study anything that was published after 1910. We shouldn't even look at a manual or any thing that Mary Baker Eddy wrote that has a date after 1910 on it. That's the last authentic writings of Mary Baker Eddy. Except for a few of these things, like what Richard Oakes and Gilbert Carpenter put together, which are some of her unpublished writings, which were done, of course, after she passed on. I'm very grateful for anyone that I learned anything from, and even though I've studied a lot of hours over the years, I feel I'm just scratching the surface, just getting started. This recording will close with the reading of The Diapason of Heaven for Spirit, and these were provided to Mary Baker Eddy's students that attended her metaphysical college, and she recommends that we read and study these frequently. If you did each one once a day, that would probably advance you every single day. These are directly from her. Here is The Diapason of Heaven for Spirit. We must declare often that Spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one Spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is Spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen.